My name's Casey. I'm the owner and founder of Citizen Yoga, and you are listening to After Class. After Class is our podcast where we get to talk to people in our community, whether they're teachers at Citizen or students or medical health professionals, mental health professionals, to help expand our platform so that we can support our greater community in their journey toward better mental health. Today, particularly, I'm going to define for you who Citizen people are. And we are, and this is how we describe ourselves, a community of practitioners who are committed to doing inner work, claiming ownership, discovering our personal value, and supporting each other on our individual journeys. And that section is really, really important, especially in regards to the topic that we're going to talk about today. And I'm here again with Dr. Christine Marin. She has supported me in my hormone journey. And today we're going to sort of go deep and personal into preconception and sort of that timeline of, for women and men, I'm sure, of when you're supposed to, in quotes, have a baby. So Christine, welcome back. I would love for you to just do a little quick introduction and tell us about who you are and, you know, some of the stuff you've done for, at least in bringing more information to the forefront around preconception.
Yeah. Thank you for having me. I love being here. So I am a doctor of osteopathic medicine. I did my board certification in family medicine and later trained with the Institute for Functional Medicine as what's called IFMCP, or an Institute for Functional Medicine Certified Practitioner. So I have been working in the functional medicine space for the last, 7 years or something. And really my practice is very much dedicated to functional medicine now. So really, I think functional medicine is best described as root cause medicine. We focus a lot on lifestyle and nutrition, and you know, it's very integrative. I use both pharmaceuticals and supplements and all of those kind of interventions, but I am particularly interested in reproductive health and preconception, in part just because of my own experience. I had recurrent pregnancy loss between my first and my second child, and there was a lot involved with that, and it really sent me down. You know, I say it's when my personal and my professional life kind of collided. And I think, you know, it was a painful time, but also an opportunity to learn a lot about my health. You know, I don't know that I would have done this like deep dive into my health at that point if it would not have been for my desire to get pregnant and to have a healthy pregnancy. So I have 3 kids now, and believe it or not, my third was a total accident because I was like super healthy and fertile.
I remember that.
But I work with a lot of women in that space, and I actually co-founded a business and platform called Hey Mommy. It's M-A-M-I. And that is really just dedicated to helping women achieve a healthier and a happier mommyhood. So we do a lot with sort of the preconception space, but also through pregnancy and postpartum and into mommyhood. I mean, we are just kind of sick of like Googling something and getting really bad information. Getting the information that's just kind of scary, like the fear tactics, you know, There shouldn't be a lot of fear around it. But we sort of help to bridge the gap also between, you know, that holistic and conventional or holistic and integrative space and bringing it more, you know, we understand my co-founder and I are both physicians. She's an MD and I'm a DO. And we're both moms of 3. And so we have a lot in common, and we've both struggled with our own pregnancy issues. And so we really, like, obviously with OBGYNs and reproductive specialists and fertility doctors and reproductive endocrinologists, they have so much to bring to the table. And then I think there is a lot to sort of integrate with this holistic space and like, what can people really do? I think ultimately though, with preconception health and sometimes postpartum, women are sort of lost. Like,
yes,
where do I go? Mm-hmm. I had the baby. I haven't seen anybody for follow-up, and it's not like the doctor's fault. It's just a system where women are sort of lost and not really served like they should be.
I think when you touch on something really important that I speak a lot about, which is there are times where your darkest moments are the the moments that create your bigger path and bigger life mission. And so if you're a person listening and you're in one of those moments that feels super dark or you're really struggling, out of that can grow a much bigger life purpose that can maybe surprise you. Mm-hmm. So just, you know, reminding you of that, any person that's listening. I think it's funny because you're mentioning something and, you know, I have had my own experience, and I told Christine we're going to do, I'll share some of my personal story too, but that it's like you go to the gyno and they're like, all right, are you going to start trying? All right, good luck. Are you taking a prenatal? Sure. Okay. That's it. Have fun. And like, what a strange moment, you know, what a strange thing to say. And so sort of uninformed, and it leaves you very uninformed. And so I think that that's part of what your work does, is it bridges the moment where somebody decides, okay, maybe I'm going to start trying, to what do I actually do have to prepare to start trying? Mm-hmm. And I think usually we have skipped the preparing into the prenatal. And so I would love to ask you this one question, because I think it's important. Women and men both, there's a pressurized timeline. You know, each generation has had their own timeline that they were pressurized by. And, you know, women and fertility, it's been pushed and pushed and pushed because women have discovered their own place in the workforce and their own, I can speak for myself, my own career dreams of what I want to do. And there's so many different perspectives. Some of my friends are like, yeah, you can definitely have a baby and have a career and you can do that. And some people are like, oh, well, you know, when you have a baby, you never know what's going to happen. And you're probably not going to want to work anymore. And so there are these like two camps. And right. So that's like one piece that you experience as I experience as a woman and an entrepreneur or somebody who wants a career. But then the generational fear of you're too old, like hurry it up. And right. So what do you say to people who come to you and are like, everybody's pressurizing me to have a baby. Like, oh, I'm going to get too old. Cause I hear that at every age, it's like somebody turns 30. I'm like, oh, I'm too old. I better have a baby. I'm 35. I'm too old. I better have a baby. So what's your perspective on what society tells us?
Yeah. I mean, what you just said, really struck a chord, because as a woman who loves my job and a mom of three, it's honestly been something I've had to fight for. Like sometimes I feel like I have had to really fight to keep my profession. But I told myself for many years, I'm going to put my career on the back burner while my husband was in training and have babies and have our family, and then I'll sort of go back. And I repeated this thing to myself a lot of times: you can have it all, but you can't have it all at the same time. And I tried to convince myself for a long time that that was going to work out, and it just didn't. Like, I just couldn't. I mean, I had like a very clear passion and desire, and I love my job and I love my work. And I was honestly kind of depressed, I think, you know, I don't know. Like I can't put my career on the back burner. Like I have a mission and I have a purpose in this life, and I can't put that purpose on hold because I want to have babies and raise a family. But I think also like some women are totally content with that, and that is fine, right? We're all different, but like how I'm built is I get so much out of my work, and I get a lot out of being a mom too, of course, but I think that my professional life is just a calling that I couldn't put on the back burner. And so I think there is this pressure, honestly, as a woman who is working, to maybe put that on the back burner for a while you sort of raise a family. But I think that that doesn't always work out. I think we just have to listen to what we need and want in our lives. And so eventually I stopped repeating that sentence to myself and was like, screw it. I can't put it on the back burner anymore. So I found a way to make it work, but it was hard. And I think with regards
can I ask you to clarify, like, what's hard? You know what I mean? And I don't mean that like I don't have children. So How do we define what is difficult? Cause I find so many different parts of my job hard. mm-hmm. you know, and yeah. parts of my life are hard. But what specifically for you was very hard about it?
Mm-hmm. Well, my husband was a fellow doing a spine surgery fellowship, and like part of the reason it's been more difficult for me, frankly, is because my husband has a really intense job. You know, he doesn't have the option to stay home or come home early on a Tuesday or whatever, really. Like he's just got a really intense job and really intense training. So, I mean, that was a piece of it for me, but also just the piece of it where it's like, there's a lot to coordinate with three kids between school and doctor's appointments and childcare and getting a babysitter and finding time for yourself. But when you find time for yourself, you actually have to pay a babysitter for that and coordinate them coming to the house. So it's just a lot to like manage, just to figure out like, where does everybody need to be? Like, I'm not going to lie, there's been a couple times where I forgot to like pick a kid up and I'm like, oh my gosh. So the thing that keeps That's my amazing. Head on straight is my yeah. nanny. I have a nanny. She's amazing. And I need her to function. I mean, I yeah. really do. And so it's been the times when my nanny's like, hey, you know, where's Vivian or whatever. I'm like, oh my gosh, I have to go pick her up, you know? And that doesn't happen all the time. But I mean, there's just a lot to think about.
Yeah.
Like, it's just a lot.
I think that the logistics
yeah.
are, I have like, I always joke around, but one of my, I hate, this is very funny that some people do know about me, but I really don't like carrying things. This is really strange, but I like, even when I go grocery shopping, if I buy like too many heavy things, I'm like, okay, that's enough heavy things. Like, I don't want to carry things. And some people really like carrying things. And I think one of my fears about having children is how much I'm going to have to carry.
You're going to have to carry a lot. Oh, I mean, that's God. The other piece is like the logistics, but also physically.
Yeah. Physically. Like the carrying.
I don't ever sit down. I mean, I really don't. Like I do when I work, but when I'm with my kids, I mean, right. I have my like activity tracker and like I really never sit down. Like I have three young children, right?
They're so two, cute.
They're four and my oldest just turned nine last week. But yeah, it's a lot physically, it's a lot logistically, and then yeah. there's this emotional piece. Like you don't really get a day off when right. you're a mom. Like you just don't. And it's amazing. They're hilarious and cute and you know, they say the funniest things that make you laugh and they're such a joy, but they're hard sometimes. And yeah. it just is what it is. Being a mom isn't easy.
Yeah. So in terms of like your recommendation, when somebody comes to you at 25 and says, oh my God, I'm getting old. I probably need to have a baby, or 30 years old, or 33 or 35 or 37 or 39, you know, how do we overcome what's a myth and what's not? Yeah. You know, what are where does our reality actually hit, or where is it just like sort of a generational fear? Cause I'm always trying to like, I don't know, like pull apart like somebody else's fear in my life or the things right. they want for me versus the things that I actually want for myself. Like, how do I differentiate and decipher between that? Because most people who are like, okay, well you better hurry up. Usually like they probably just want grandkids.
Yeah.
They like selfishly just want grandkids, you know? And yeah. I'm like, that's great. But like, I'm always trying to pull apart like, well, what are the facts here?
Yeah.
And what are the myths around, right. Healthy fertility?
Yeah. So I think there's a lot of different things to consider, and I'll talk about the fertility and that health aspect in a minute, but just, I think we can't rush it necessarily based on a concern for fertility and health. I mean, that is a piece of the puzzle. It's like we have to put all of the different factors in there. But I think there's also the piece about career. There's the piece about financially, like, are you ready? There's a piece about community. Are your friends all having babies? Do any of them have babies? Like, community and having friends with babies is a big piece of it. Like, that makes being a mom more fun, I think, when it's like, you know, you can go hang out with your friends with their babies. But there is definitely a piece about the fertility, and there is definitely a piece about pregnancy outcomes with age. I mean, there's no question about that. And we can look at the numbers and see, but like, you know, in kind of late 30s and 40s, our fertility definitely declines. It has a lot to do with our ovarian reserve. Some women feel more empowered by getting a level called AMH, which basically tells us about our ovarian reserve. It's not a perfect number, but it can help a woman understand her fertility and perhaps understand how much time she has on the clock. So if AMH is lower, that might be a reason to see a fertility doctor sooner, or, you know, just get a better handle on things. I mean, we never know what fertility is going to look like when we start trying, because for 30, 40 years, whatever it might be, we've been trying not to get pregnant, right? So like when we actually try to get pregnant, like that's a whole new thing. So
where do you get that measured, or how do you get that measured?
You can just go to a normal lab. It's just called an AMH. Don't do it when you're on birth control pills because it messes with accuracy, but I mean, Quest, LabCorp, whatever, can draw an AMH. So I think also though, there can be a side of that that could potentially be discouraging to people if it's a low number and make them more anxious about it. But you know, most fertility doctors and reproductive endocrinologists find this to be a helpful indicator of fertility. I mean, and we just have to realize, like, what I do is obviously fertility doctors and reproductive endocrinologists are super important. They can rule out structural abnormalities and do a full workup for people who have a problem getting pregnant. And, you know, definitely there are structural reasons and things why a fertility doctor needs to help. But like, there's also this diagnosis of unexplained infertility. And it's just unexplained because we can't like put our finger on exactly why you can't get pregnant. But I have a strong belief that our underlying health really influences our fertility. And so I think for any woman, it's just like really taking care of our underlying health issues. Hormonal issues, thyroid issues, all of that plays a really big role in our ability to get pregnant. I think, I mean, we know that pregnancy outcomes change later in life too. And so, you know, people over 40 have an increased risk of things like preeclampsia. And I mean, we have to know that there are numbers that show women of older age have increased risk of birth defects. And it is what it is, you know? So I think it's like, it's sort of like I always talk about risk benefit with everything. And so we just have to consider like, okay, what are the risks in waiting and what are the benefits? And we just have to kind of weigh those, and it's a scale. And that said, it's like, there's a lot you can do for prevention and egg health and just really like protecting your own underlying health and taking good care of yourself. There are certainly, we know about supplements like methylfolate, or you know, people might know it as folic acid, but it should be methylfolate. Choline is a really important nutrient. Yeah,
Tell me about that one. Just talk about that one, because I think, you know, I had mentioned to you, you know, sort of my own fear is a lot about mental health, obviously. You know, what my family has a history of mental illness. And so, you know, it was really like empowering to talk to you about, well, Casey, if you just, you know, up your choline, at least like, you're taking like proactive measures. Yeah. So I think that's really interesting.
Really proactive measures we can take like that. Mm-hmm. But choline is one that doesn't get a lot of play. I mean, most of us know folic acid, right? But it shouldn't even be folic acid. It's methylfolate that you want. And then choline. And choline probably plays as big of a role as methylfolate does in prevention of neural tube defects. But it is not in most prenatals. And if you look at the back of your prenatal vitamin, it'll sometimes say choline, but at a very low dose. And so when we're pregnant or trying to conceive, we definitely want it at a much higher dose. Oh, I think it's 450 milligrams, kind of depending on where you are, but that's also influenced by your underlying genetic needs and stuff like that. But choline's a big one, and you can get it through things like egg yolk and organ meats, and you can also take it in a really good high quality prenatal vitamin. But again, like I said, most don't have it. I was just going to say the other big one for women who are trying to conceive, and especially if they're over 35, is CoQ10. So CoQ10 has been shown to help with egg health, but at a pretty high dose, and a good quality pharmaceutical grade supplement. Usually I do like a 600 milligram CoQ10, which is a lot. I mean, normally if you buy it off the counter or over the counter, it's like maybe 100 milligrams. So, you know, I use one in my practice that's a 300 milligram pill, and I have them take one in the morning and one at night.
Great. Yeah. So, you know, I love what you said where it's like the managing or the balancing of, you know, risk and benefit of, you know, where you are in your life. And I think that this is a bigger statement in terms of, you know, every part of our life, besides, forget pregnancy, having children, it could just be getting married, you know, everybody has their own time that everything feels right. And I think that that's one of the most difficult things to trust in, is that we all have our own, I don't even want to use the word divine timing, because there's a logic around it. Like, you're not, certain people aren't ready for certain things at certain times. Some people never want to run their own business, you know? So if everybody had to run their own business, it'd be like the same thing. Okay, well, you know, in order for you to be a mature adult, you must start your own thing.
Yeah.
And not everybody wants to start their own thing and have that kind of pressure. And so I just think that in having this conversation, talking to a doctor, you know, or Christine, you know, I love talking to Dr. Marin about it, because, you know, there's an empowerment piece of like, okay, here are the factors and here are the risks, and let me help you mitigate logically some of the risks due to you, me prioritizing the benefit. And so women that are listening, men that are listening, understanding that if you educate, and I think that that's why I wanted to do something on preconception. Mm-hmm. If you educate yourself on, you know, how to make up for the risks that you're taking, it won't feel as scary in taking some of those risks, but also understanding that there are risks associated. And again, I think that this goes back to education. It goes back to having good resource. And it's not just, all right, leave the gyno, have fun, see you later, take a prenatal. Well, which prenatal? How do you know which prenatal? You know, and so let's talk about some of the primary things for men and women, because I think there's so much pressure on women in preconception.
Yes.
That, I don't know, maybe it annoys me.
It annoys me so much.
Like, it's not just my body, it's your body too. And we're together.
Yes.
So, okay. Now what should men and women be doing? Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Preconception.
I'm so glad you bring up men, because it is often this like left out piece of the puzzle. And literally 20 to 30% of infertility cases are solely because of a problem with a male. 50% of infertility cases involve the male. And so we have to think about the male factors that contribute to infertility and to birth defects. A lot of this is revolving around exposure to reproductive toxins. And so we should talk about some of the environmental stuff. I literally just wrote an entire blog post on this, but like, there's other pieces too, lifestyle factors, blood sugar, diabetes is like a big risk factor for men. Nutrition, sperm count, quality, movement, all of that stuff is really influenced by what men do day to day. And so I think some of the big ones that both men and women should be doing is just eating more real food and less processed food. So, nutrient dense, organic, low in heavy metals, you know, when it comes to fish.
Which fish has heavy metals? You guys, I'm taking notes, by the way.
Yeah. So the fish with heavy metals, tuna and swordfish are some of the big ones. Some of the better choices for fish are scallops and things like wild salmon. I mean, the sad reality is that most fish are somewhat contaminated, but again, it's like this risk benefit thing. Like they don't have to be perfect. But sardines are really great. Like if you like sardines, you know, but I would really steer clear of things like tuna and swordfish.
So what do you consider a lot of something? I think that that's interesting. Like what's a lot? Is it weekly? Is it none at all?
Yeah, I think it depends on the person and what their underlying issues are and how well they get rid of stuff, like how well they detox with their liver and gut, you know? So, and some of that's influenced by things like MTHFR, which is like a genetic sort of polymorphism, which can influence things. So there's no right answer to that, but I generally say with tuna, don't eat it, you know? It's like wherever we can cut it out, don't eat it. I don't say that about salmon. You know, even if salmon has some heavy metals and stuff, if we can buy wild salmon and eat it once a week, I think that's great. I mean, I don't know. Cod is a good option too. Dover sole. I try to eat fish at least once a week. I think, you know, for people who eat fish more often, they just need to be really cognizant about like using the NRDC, which is the National Resource Defense Council, I believe. They have a fish wallet guide, you know, that you can like look at so you can see fish that are higher and lower in heavy metals. So I think for people who eat fish often, you just have to be really cognizant about picking the ones with lower levels. I mean,
okay.
I don't know.
No, that's helpful.
With tuna, like just don't eat it.
Yeah. So what, okay. So what are other recommendations for men and women?
So the big one is toxins. So really being careful to avoid reproductive toxins, especially at home, because that's where you have the most control. And so the big ones here are plastics. Like they've done all sorts of studies looking at BPA, which is like this ubiquitous thing that they add to everything that has plastic. It's literally like in everything. Even though BPA-free plastic I would stay away from because it has things like BPS, which is just a different kind of derivative that they use because marketing. And they can say it's BPA free. So really just staying away from plastics is a big one. Heavy metals. So this is a really interesting thing. The FDA just recently, like at the end of September, came out with a new recommendation warning for the risks of dental amalgams in women trying to conceive. And so you know, this has been sort of a not even a controversy. I mean, I've always like asked people about their silver fillings and that's what an amalgam, it's just the silver filling, but they actually have mercury and they give off a mercury vapor. So it's mostly inhalational exposure. But the FDA just came out with a statement and said, you know, the evidence shows that the exposure to mercury from dental amalgams could lead to adverse health effects in these high risk populations. But those high risk populations include women who are pregnant, women who want to get pregnant, women who are nursing, children less than six. It also includes people with neurological issues, which includes potentially migraines. But, you know, it's a lot of people. It's kind of like all the people I know, right, who are women who are pregnant or nursing. I think that, you know, heavy metals, obviously we know about lead. I think mercury is finally like coming to the forefront. But we have to be cognizant that these kind of things are neurotoxins and they're not good for our babies. That said, don't remove, I would highly recommend against removal of amalgams when somebody is pregnant or nursing, because it can mobilize a lot of that stuff. And there's very safe ways to remove it and there's unsafe ways. And so I always recommend working with a doctor who is certified in the safe removal of mercury amalgams. But anyway, so heavy metals is a big one and potentially now amalgams, you know, come into play there. Obviously, you know, there's other sorts of toxins if you're smoking or even like with marijuana, I worry about a lot of toxins actually in marijuana. It's grown with a lot of crap and with pesticides that are like have been illegal for like decades. I think, you know, just back to nutrient dense foods, but also taking supplements. So things with methylfolate, CoQ10. Choline, as we talked about, zinc can also be a really big one, especially for men.
Great. So, how long before you're trying to get pregnant, do you sort of start this regimen and become more aware?
Yeah. So it depends on what your timeline is. I mean, optimally, if somebody kind of knows like in maybe a year or two, they want to have a baby. That is awesome because they have the foresight to really even work on detox. I think most of us can benefit from some detoxification, like beyond just our normal, you know, the normal things we do like sweat, poop, and pee. Mm-hmm. So we can get more aggressive about detox if you know well in advance. But if you're like really actively trying to conceive or you might get pregnant in the next month or two, don't, you know, you don't want to upregulate that kind of detoxification. You just want to get the stuff out of your house because it's good for you, but it's also good for your future baby.
Mm. You know? So what is one recommendation for things that are not like, I know that you have a list, on Hey Mom. Mommy.
Yeah. Hey, Mommy.
I always want to call it Hey Mammy for some reason.
You and 100 other people.
Okay, great.
It's like, Hey Mommy. It's like, it's got a Latin vibe.
It's cute.
So, there's a lot of things you can do, and not do, but I think just some of the more simple and inexpensive things to do are, I mentioned, you know, getting rid of plastics, but making sure your kitchen is clean, like using cast iron and silicone and, stainless steel instead of like Teflon. Another one, if you think about air quality, like the way that we build our homes is not great for air quality because everything just kind of trapped in and we don't have natural ventilation. So like literally just use your fan in your kitchen when you're cooking on the stove. You need to exhaust mm-hmm. that chemicals out from cooking. Same thing in your bathroom, using the exhaust fan so you can get rid of some of the moisture in the bathroom. Opening your windows, trying to get some airflow. There's definitely some things you can do to like pimp out your HVAC system, which I'm like, that's on my list of things I want to do, but you know, those are big deals. And then making sure you have clean water. Like, unfortunately our water is really toxic. You can go to this mm-hmm. website. It's called the EWG tap water database. Put in your zip code and look and see what's in your water. I find that Michigan water is actually better than Colorado water. So y'all are lucky, but
yeah, we got an air filter, like a floor air filter. And it made such a big difference. I was having like all these allergy problems last year. And yeah. Adam was suggesting, we just went on wirecutter.com and found, I don't even know which one we have, but it's just a standalone air filter. It was $100 and I have zero allergies now.
Oh, that's awesome.
You know, yeah. And it was just something that simple that you're like, mm-hmm. oh, there are like, I'm the air quality in our bedroom was yeah. not there. Yeah. It wasn't filtering in the way that it needed to. Mm-hmm. So I think that there are like all these small, changes that make huge differences.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what if, you know, I know that people can go on to Hey Mommy and like actually look and read that she has an incredible long PDF on there and just like all these incredible resources with supplement links. So you can check those out so that people aren't like, well, which supplement? They're all listed on Christine's website for the most part. But what about people who are struggling with infertility or they're losing pregnancies? Mm-hmm. What are some of their go-tos in terms of, you know, I know acupuncture, Alex, who works out of our studio, she has had such incredible success helping people get pregnant. So don't underestimate, particularly, I think Chinese medicine is one of the most powerful, incredible methods to help regulate hormones, it's basically back to wellness. That's the best way to think about it. It's like it helps to balance out any imbalances. It's not necessarily adding anything in.
Yeah.
But what would you say to both women and men who are, you know, maybe regularly losing? I have a lot of students who are struggling to get pregnant, and I tell people all the time, like, go find Christine. And I know she can't, you can't treat everybody, but I'm sure that you have a recommendation of somebody who works like you.
Yeah.
So what do you tell people?
I think sometimes people delay seeing a fertility specialist because, I don't know. It's scary. I think also a lot of the messaging is, unless you've been waiting for a year, you don't need to see a fertility specialist. So they might even see their primary care and they're like, how long have you been trying? It's only been 9 months, you know? So I don't think the point is you don't have to wait. So I think, you know, ultimately it's helpful for a fertility specialist to rule out some of the red flags or some of, you know, the reasons that we need to really watch for, that can cause fertility issues. But ultimately the diagnosis of unexplained infertility is really, really common. It's one of the most common diagnoses in a fertility clinic. And so if you've been diagnosed with unexplained infertility or you've had recurrent pregnancy loss and nobody knows why, then it's like, okay, that's where I come in. And that's where I really help women just figure out, well, like, what is it? Is it some underlying autoimmune disease? I find that a lot of people have autoimmunity and they have no idea. So that's things like Hashimoto's disease, which is an autoimmune condition that influences the thyroid. Reproductive toxins, like we just talked about, are a big deal. Environmental issues, including mold exposure in your home, are a big deal. Just underlying inflammation, which can often be the case with chronic digestive issues. Undiagnosed celiac disease is something I see sometimes, but I think a big one that gets overlooked by a lot of people is thyroid. And so having hypothyroidism or even subclinical hypothyroidism is, I think, just really underappreciated and pretty ubiquitous. I mean, it's very, very common, especially among women. Also, it's common in some men, but especially among women, it's just a really common problem. And most people are just screened with something called a TSH test, which You know, this is a bit controversial, but, you know, endocrinologists generally just check a TSH. That's been a matter of controversy for years, and it's in the literature where, you know, endocrinologists support a tighter range for TSH. But if you've had your TSH checked and you're trying to get pregnant, it should be less than 2.5. And that's really agreed upon in the literature. Whereas, like, if you're not trying to conceive and your TSH is 4, that's considered normal. But if you're trying to conceive, then we have a much tighter range, although that range doesn't show up on your lab report because your lab doesn't know you're trying to conceive, right? Like, Quest doesn't know where you're at. And so it might look normal and your doctor might know that or not know that number or something like that. So just be aware, like, your TSH should be close to 1 or 2 if you're trying to get pregnant. And I think there's a lot more to thyroid function than just a TSH. So for women with unexplained infertility, make sure you also check thyroid antibodies. So it's called thyroid peroxidase or TPO and thyroglobulin or TG. Antibodies, those are things that can help you understand if you have Hashimoto's, which is that underlying autoimmune condition, which in turn, you know, over time causes hypothyroidism. I also look at a free T3 and a free T4, and I find these to be clinically really helpful. Sometimes people, you know, their TSH might look pretty normal, but like that's not the whole picture. And I think really understanding what your thyroid hormones look like is important. Getting a free TSH and free T4, it's a loaded kind of topic, and they're not perfect tests either, but they're clinically really helpful. I also have to put in there, like, I check a reverse T3 on people, and if I find that number's really high, it's like, I know there's something else going on with them outside of the thyroid, and that might be inflammatory or related to heavy metals or something like that.
Yeah, I think all of this information is just helpful, and again, one of the things you and I had discussed is, you know, there's a lot of information on, you know, while you're pregnant and not a lot of information on before that or after that. Yeah. And so you remembering that there are resources out there to help you.
Yeah. And I think it's like,
feel like you're in the dark.
Yeah. It's hard. It's complicated, right? Like all this stuff I'm spouting out, like I get it. It's not easy. It's complicated. People should educate themselves. But ultimately, I think find a doctor that they can trust and, you know, work with, which it in itself is just as challenging as finding a yoga studio you love, right? Like it takes some time.
Yeah. Well, I think that that was super helpful. Is there any other, in terms of preconception, maybe one last tip that you think is super important and maybe isn't always addressed? I know that sort of puts you on the spot, but I think that in that pamphlet, you know, you have a lot of information there. But are there any other recommendations?
Yeah.
One other one.
I think the other one I like to use is something called nutrigenomics. And I mentioned earlier this gene called MTHFR, but like we all have, you know, when we're pregnant, we can do screening, carrier screening, looking at genetic traits and things like that. This is different. This really looks at sort of what your genes need in terms of nutrition, because we all evolved along different migration patterns, and some of us need more fat and some of us need less carbs and some of us need whatever it might be. Some of us need more folate. Some of us need more choline. Some of us need more vitamin A. And so this kind of testing can just kind of give me a clue into personalized nutrition and what people need to optimize their own underlying supplementation and nutrition. I always emphasize like genes are just a piece of the puzzle. Genes load the gun, environment pulls the trigger. Just because somebody has like a couple SNPs on their MTHFR gene, it doesn't mean they're like doomed or anything. I mean,
where do you get this? Yeah.
So this is my favorite company to use is called Nutrition Genome. In the past, like, I don't know, like a decade ago, 23andMe started giving health information. So 23andMe is like, and Ancestry.com, they both give, like, look at your genetics to show your ancestry. And they do, at least 23andMe gives, like, some health information. It's pretty limited. I mean, I think things like, what does your earwax look like? And actually, there are some things on there now with our most recent report that will show risk factors for Alzheimer's disease. And so some health-related data, but Nutrition Genome does the best job, I think, in their report of like telling you this is the nutrition you need to support this gene function. And in turn, while this gene might convey some risks to X, Y, and Z, it also conveys some benefits for these things. So it's just a very balanced approach versus sometimes you go and see those reports and it's like, you need 17 supplements and, you know, it's just a little bit much.
Great. I think that all of that's super helpful. And so if somebody is interested in speaking with you, how do they get a hold of you? And I guess one question is, can you see people that are not in Texas, Michigan, or Colorado? No. So if you are listening to our podcast and you do not live in those states, you can always reach out to Christine. I'm sure she has recommendations, hopefully recommendations in your area. But you know, Hey Mommy is on Instagram and you can find them. I think it's HEY.MMA.
Our Instagram is Hey Mommy, HEYMAMI.life. And okay. Then our website is heymommy.com.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, that was super helpful. And if they want to get a hold of you personally for a consultation.
Yeah. So my personal professional page is drchristinemarin.com. And then on Instagram, it's just at drchristinemarin. And I'm there a lot.
Awesome. And, you know, just for listeners, other topics we're going to cover, I would love to do one on PMS. I find PMS has really affected my life and gut health, nutrition. So stay tuned for those episodes. And again, Christine, thank you so, so much for being here. It's been awesome.
Of course. Thanks for having me, Casey.